La industria petrolera ha tenido acceso a millones de hectáreas de tierras y aguas federales y no es necesario ceder las últimas zonas públicas costeras protegidas para que las compañías petroleras obtengan todavía más ganancias que han alcanzado cifras récord, dijo Brun. La Coordinadora Nacional para la Reducción de Desastres de Guatemala informó que se consumieron 2.500 hectáreas de bosque del país centroamericano. En lo que va de la temporada seca, se contabilizaron 178 incendios forestales y todavía hay 3 incendios activos. Los lugares donde más incendios se han registrado son los departamentos de Baja Verapaz, Quiché, Chiquimula, Jalapa y Chimaltenango. En Perú, el secretario general de la Federación Fajardina, Amador Noa Quispe, denunció que los ríos se están secando por la explotación minera en la provincia de Fajardo.
Los ríos se están secando por la explotación minera, como utilizan el agua, y antes en esos ríos había animales, había pues truchas.
Quispe explicó que en toda la provincia las mineras no respetan los contratos y engañan a la comunidad. Agregó que las empresas están dañando la ganadería y la agricultura.
El gobierno no hace caso, o sea, no hace caso a la ley, les concede, como nos estamos convirtiendo a nivel Perú en exportador de materias primas, entonces, y no hay desarrollo, sino que las minas se explotan, abandonan, después abandonan, queda como si hubiera bombardeado, no queda todo árido, ya no se puede cultivar.
La Unión Americana de Libertades Civiles, ACLU, por sus siglas en inglés, informó que 2 indocumentados de origen mexicano con enfermedades mentales serán liberados luego de pasar 5 años en la cárcel. La ACLU sostuvo que a ambos se les negó un proceso justo. Las autoridades de migración liberarán a Guillermo Gómez Sánchez y José Antonio Franco González bajo la supervisión de sus familiares, indicó la Unión Americana de Libertades Civiles. Según la organización, aproximadamente 15% de los inmigrantes detenidos padecen alguna enfermedad mental. Los gobiernos de Brasil y Estados Unidos iniciaron negociaciones con miras a la instalación de una base policial militar en Río de Janeiro, destinada a reforzar la vigilancia y mejorar el combate al narcotráfico en el Atlántico Sur, reveló el diario O Estado de Sao Paulo. Según el periódico, la base funcionaría bajo control brasileño, siguiendo el modelo de otras 2 instaladas en Estados Unidos y en Lisboa, que ejercen la misma función en el Caribe y en el Atlántico Norte.
En el mundo hay unos 105 millones de trabajadores migrantes. Muchos de ellos carecen de beneficios y del derecho de poseer un trabajo decente. A menudo ganan menos o solo el salario mínimo, o no se les paga. Trabajan en condiciones inseguras, sin protección social ni libertad sindical, y también sufren discriminación y racismo. Sobre estos temas, la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, la OIT, lanzó un estudio que saca a relucir la necesidad de adoptar un enfoque basado en los derechos de los millones de trabajadores migrantes de todo el mundo. Carlos Martínez entrevistó a Ibrahim Awar, director del Programa de Migración Internacional de la OIT.
Y lo siento mucho, pero es a la hora de Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is time for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. My apologies to those who aren't going to get to hear the end of this news broadcast in Espanol, but it was put on 15 minutes late, so it's unfortunately, well, perhaps otro tiempo. Coming up next, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, almost entirely in inglés, but if we have any Spanish translators, si hay ellos que quieren traducir en español, por favor, llámame, and we'll attempt to, quiero que hacerlo. I want to do it. Anybody wants to translate? Stay tuned for the April 1st, no foolin', 2010 version of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Thank you.
Rudy Valley again, stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana, a song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime? They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Buddy, can you spare a dime?
And, of course, that was Rudy Valley, the original, well, perhaps not the original, but a very old-time brother, Can You Spare a Dime, from the Great Depression, American music in the 30s. 1930s, and here we are 80 years later, and you don't need a dime, you need a couple of bucks for a cup of coffee. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. Be with you for two more hours, and then it'll be Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs. Inviting your calls, 831-427-3772, 427-3772. That's the call-in number here in case you want to get in touch. I'm going to be playing and trying to catch up with a show missed on Sunday, catch up with some tapes from the street. Also be kind of covering a collection of news articles I ran into and stuffed in my bag before racing to the studio. And reminding you that there will be a trial next week, another one of those sinister sing-song trials. In fact, I'll give you the update on what happened last week since I wasn't with you on Sunday. If you tuned in hoping to hear what happened with the trials of Becky Johnson and Michelle Duyka, who were both charged with unreasonably disturbing noises, a rather rude way of describing some, you know, so-so singing on the street, which happened very briefly, or fairly briefly, certainly not continuously, way back on January 6th at a tabling at the Bookshop Santa Cruz that primarily involved serving homeless people food, signing petitions, having placards which people read about the rise in the homeless death rate and almost tripling of that rate in the county over the last year, and also interviews, which I was doing on the street about these issues. Apparently that did not please some folks on the second story of the St. George Hotel. Yeah, that's what it is. I was going to say St. Francis, but it's St. George. And they didn't come down and ask us to be quieter, which we might have responded, sure. We might have wondered because we weren't that loud. We sang a couple of verses of Downtown in a strong voice, I think sufficient to be heard, not louder than any other musicians on the street, as far as I could tell, either that day or any other day. But that wasn't enough for them. They called the police with the intention of driving us away, which Officer Schoenfeld then tried to do, threatening essentially to cite us if we didn't leave. But, oh, it wasn't her opinion that we were singing unreasonably loud. No, she was simply the neutral party, which, of course, isn't true, because she has the power and the responsibility of determining whether there's reasonable cause for such a citation. And we agreed actually to sing more silently, but that didn't make any difference to her. She reported to the complaining party that we weren't going to quiet down and that they'd have to come and write a ticket if they wanted that to happen, which hopefully will defeat the citations in court, because if the officer doesn't think it's unreasonably disturbing noises, and yet at the same time they're advising the people to come down and sign a citation, even after the musicians have agreed to quiet down, you have a peculiar situation where it appears the police officer has an unusual agenda. And I think that, my opinion is that the police have kind of been trained to not to get people to be quieter, but to get people to leave. And when they don't want to leave or refuse to leave because they're doing something that they can't really reasonably leave from, the protest they're involved in, or shut up entirely, which we didn't feel was a reasonable request, then the punishment is, regardless of whether the law is being violated, and the law itself doesn't say you can't sing loudly on the street, it says you can't sing so loudly as to cause physical discomfort to people of ordinary sensitiveness, and provided that that's not involved in an activity which is otherwise legally conducted. I always spend about 5 minutes going through this, but it's really important in a way because it impacts all street performers, because this is the kind of tactic that has been used not just on us but on other street musicians. They don't say, please play more quietly, we've gotten a complaint. They say, you have to move along. And there's no law that requires us to move along. There is a move-along law that has to do with display devices. If you have an open guitar case and you've been there for an hour, that would be a basis for asking you to move along, although an unconstitutional basis in my view, and an inappropriate basis, but they would have a legal basis. But that's not what happened to us and what's happening to street performers generally. They're simply being told just sort of ex cathedra, fancy Latin phrase, which means, from the pulpit, from on high, that they've got to move along. Don't ask us why. We're just giving you the bad news because some resident or some business wants you to. They seem to have forgotten that the public spaces are for everyone, and the laws are supposed to regulate this, not the preferences of the merchants and the residents. There has to be a real violation, and that's going to be coming up next Tuesday in Department 10, which is the courtroom in the basement of the county building. Michelle will be there, and she actually wasn't doing any singing at all. She just showed up to find out what was going on. She was also a resident of the St. George. She came down to see what was happening, and she was falsely identified as a singer. And it's interesting, when we went to these, I guess this is my report from last Thursday and Friday. On Thursday, she was supposed to go to trial, Michelle was, in Department 10, in the courtroom of Commissioner Baskett, who I generally recommend people disqualify, although that can send you into the jaws of an even worse judge, Ariadne Simons, up in Department 1, where Becky Johnson is facing a trial on April 16th. But we went to that Department 10 courtroom on Thursday for Michelle's trial and found she wasn't even on the calendar. And it turned out that they had tried her in absentia a month before through apparently what appeared to be a court error, even though the officer didn't show up, and there was no indication that the complaining citizen who had issued the ticket, the officer issued the ticket, but the complaining citizen signed it along with the officer. His name is Sean Riley, a resident of the St. George. He didn't show up either, or if he did, there was no record of it. But yet, Michelle was found guilty and sentenced to a $445 fine, I believe. At least that was the bail. That's how much you have to pay to avoid court, and I suspect the fine was probably the same. The clerks agreed to set her again, set her case for hearing on the 6th of April. That's Tuesday. That's when I'm suggesting folks who are interested might want to go and take a look at this. That's at 1:30 in the afternoon in Department 10. That's the courtroom in the basement of the county building, commonly known as traffic or infraction court, right around the next to the law library and right around the corner from the cafeteria in the courtroom, if you know about it. That's where mostly traffic citations show up in front of Commissioner Kim Baskett. It's not clear whether she's going to get a trial or whether she's just going to get an opportunity to beg for a trial. She will, as I understand it, have an attorney, Ed Fry, who will be with her arguing her case, and witnesses that will purport to show that, well, that will show, will testify that she was not there. So why is she being dragged in at all? She was actually physically restrained by one of the officers, Officer Azua, because she tried to leave, saying, I'm innocent citizen, I'm just walking by. But the officer Schoenfeld orchestrating this complaint had essentially, I think there were originally six people that Sean Riley was going to drag into court on this matter. It's hard to say whether he understood that we had agreed we will sing more quietly. We actually only had about half an hour left of time there. We were going to be doing our petitioning and flyering and informing the public and so forth about the homeless civil rights issues that we're concerned about and you hear talked about on this station at this time in this program. So, again, Becky's case came up the next day on Friday in the courtroom of Ariadne Simons because she had disqualified referee Baskett through what's called a 170.6 CCP motion, which I generally recommend to people, even though Ariadne Simons is a horrible judge, in my experience, although there have been a couple people, a public defender who's had better experience in her treatment of what's called suppression motions, but suppression of evidence motions, but that doesn't usually impact homeless people. Simons, the one thing to be said about Simons is that she does allow homeless people to do community service directly with her court, or has in the past. She wouldn't allow me to do it when she found me guilty of refusing to leave the Metro Transit Center when told to do so by a security guard, even though I wasn't violating any laws and I wasn't violating any policies of the Metro, just he didn't want me there. I said, no, I'm talking to these folks, but I was cited and I was found guilty by Simons in a very bizarre trial, which you can find, as well as information about these singing trials, on indiebay.org, kind of an independent news service, Santa Cruz Indie Media. And again, it's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, in case you want to check this out. And so Becky went into court on Friday. Becky Johnson, who's a longtime homeless activist, writes, has her own blog, Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com. If you want to check it out, she's got a lot of, I think, good stuff on homeless issues. I disagree with her on other issues she has, but my focus here is homeless civil rights. And Simons listened to the case, which wasn't presented by a police officer. It wasn't presented by the witness, Simon Riley. It was rather presented by city attorney John Barasone, who was there with three police officers and two witnesses in a very unusual city intervention in the case. This is normally a matter to be settled between one citizen and another, but when the city attorney takes an interest, it kind of means something, and I don't know why the city attorney would involve himself in such a bad case. I mean, case of someone screaming for an hour in such a way that hurts the ears of all passersby. And I understand there was such a case in front of the old Cooper House in the 80s. I heard about it from former attorney Ray Glock-Grunike, who discussed this old case that he had defended in the court of Judge Kessel. That, you know, might be an appropriate occasion for citizens to make an arrest and for police to involve themselves because it's just hurting your ears. This seemed like a political decision by the complainant, Simon Riley, and by the officer, Schoenfeld. And part of a broader program to empower merchants and residents to essentially assert their will against the rights of people on the streets, regardless of what the law says. In other words, an attempt to sort of make a downtown more, quote, friendly by eliminating the people that seem to be threatening in appearance or annoying in manner to those who have conservative sensibilities. And while this may serve a certain segment of the population, it obviously is not constitutional, and it obviously doesn't really serve the entire community if you believe in a diverse community. And it really is it's a pisser if you're poor, because it means they come down on you. And that's what's been happening downtown with performers, homeless people, young people, and so forth. And you'll hear Mayor Mike Rodkin say, hey, we haven't driven the homeless away, so you can see them downtown all the time. And that certainly is true, because what the police do is they respond when the citizens complain, whatever the merit of the complaint may be, apparently, however, unjustified by the law or the circumstances. If a citizen complains, the police officers are there to hassle those they're complaining about. And there's just too much poverty and too much mobility, and Santa Cruz is still a place where people come and go, poor people, in spite of these kinds of pressures. So you'll still see homeless and poor people downtown, but it's a much more restricted scene for them, and it's a much more dangerous one in the sense that they may run afoul of the law, or they have to keep a much lower profile. And you might say, well, when I went down there, I saw this gang of ragamuffins singing loudly downtown. You're going to see that still occasionally. It does happen, for sure. And it happens, and then the police can come down and run them off. But the idea is not that there is a sort of should be a community where we're all working together, but rather it's a situation where the overflow of poverty, whether it's through foreclosures or unemployment or lack of housing, you name it, the wretched economy, not everybody can join up and go be a killer in Afghanistan with the military and support Obama's great war over there like Democrats would have you do and Republicans think we aren't doing enough of. There's the highest unemployment rate since the 30s in this county. So it's a pretty miserable scene for a lot of people, and merchants are stepping up their scapegoating of homeless people downtown. Anyway, let me run through a few clippings I found that kind of interested me. Some of them may have read. The March 26th Sentinel has a story, Law Enforcers Divided Over Legalized Pot Initiative. And as you know, you may know if you've been following the issue, the decriminalization or legalization of marijuana, small quantities of marijuana, for sale, cultivation, use, transportation, and so forth, would be happening if the voters pass an initiative which is now on the ballot. It also gives the cities and counties the power to regulate, I think, sales out of existence, as it seems to be happening in a number of jurisdictions, or freezing them and creating a monopoly on existing clubs, as has been done recently in Santa Cruz. That happened, I guess it was last Tuesday, the final vote happened in Santa Cruz in the city council, making it illegal to banning any new medical marijuana clubs in Santa Cruz and shrinking the area where existing clubs could be, and there are only two of them anyway. This story talks about that law enforcement is divided over the legalized pot initiative, and Jack Cole, president of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who I don't think I've talked to, though I have talked to law enforcement officials who have opposed prohibition when they've spoken at city council some years back, Santa Cruz City Council. We spend so much of our police time chasing around these nonviolent drug offenders, we don't have time to protect our people from murderers and child molesters. It's an argument often made and has a certain, superficial sense to it. I don't know if it's true. It sounds like it might be. I mean, if you have more time, you might have more time to deal with other crimes. I know there's certainly a certain amount you can do to track down, one crime or another. But it's always been not just you want to give the police more opportunity to go after people for other crimes, although certainly there are other crimes that are worth looking at for sure.
by either the citizenry or by the police or by somebody. We have to address those evils. But the drug war itself is a vast criminal enterprise that is taking place against the citizenry. And I'm using the word criminal in the sense that it violates all our rights. It produces all kinds of misery and profiteering. It's done as a racket by a combination of DAs, judges, lawyers, prison guards, police officials, politicians, drug testing and pharmaceutical firms. I mean, you name it. All these people have an interest in this war. Not to mention, and then there are a number of people who are misguided. This is an old argument which doesn't require, you know, reiteration here. Just to note that there are some people opposing it and supporting the Tax Cannabis Act, as the initiative is known. 1.3 million was spent on it, according to this article, by businesses controlled by Richard Lee, who operates a medical marijuana dispensary in Oakland, founded Oaksterdam University, which trains people to run their own medical marijuana businesses. Largest donations to the marijuana business are from an individual not connected to the marijuana businesses for the Tax Cannabis Act came from George Zimmer, founder and chief executive of the Men's Warehouse. Opponents claim that legalization will pit a few wealthy individuals against regular Californians who will give the thumbs down to the measure. Rich dilettantes want to legalize drugs and ordinary people are going to consider the ramifications on their families, according to John Lovell, who's a law enforcement guy who opposes Tax Cannabis Act. And that's only the beginning of this discussion. There's an interesting paper out called West Coast Leaf. You can pick it up in Logos, which big win for cannabis at Cal Supreme Court study, or I should say story, by Chris Conrad, the Kelly decision, which some of you in the know may already know about, but may some of you may not. The California State Supreme Court gave patients a unanimous victory January 21st. This paper is not as recent as it might be. In its long-awaited People v. Kelly decision, the court handed patients a four-way win. It affirmed the constitutionality of the medical marijuana program, commonly known as the SB 420 patient ID system. It affirmed state and local guidelines as a safe harbor from arrest for patients in the state ID card program. It struck down the nominal quantity limits on a patient's legal defense. It affirmed the constitutionality of state patient collectives. In other words, while preserving all existing patient and collective protections, the ruling means that every patient is entitled to cultivate and possess a reasonable but not unlimited supply of cannabis, regardless of state or local policy. And that's, of course, because the initiative under which marijuana was legalized for medical purposes was passed by the voters and not by the legislature, so the legislature can't change it or restrict it. The court held that the MMP program, the medical marijuana program, the voluntary statewide program with its ID cards, safe harbor, local guidelines, and doctor's exception can spare patients from arrest and does not violate Proposition 215. So in the past, as I understand it, the Proposition 215 has just been said, well, the cops can arrest you, they can take away your medicine, but once you get to court, you can use Proposition 215 to say, see, I'm a medical marijuana patient, drop charges against me. This seems to say that they can't even arrest you now if you have your card available. If you can, you know, whip up the money to go get yourself a doctor's recommendation and then whip up the money to go get a card, then, you know, possibly you'll be, if the police decide they don't want to charge you with something else. And I've heard of cases where Santa Cruz police ignore the medical marijuana card, although I think generally they don't. I think they generally respect it. Then you'll be presumably safe from arrest for medical marijuana. Don't try to smoke it anywhere in town, not just on Pacific Avenue, where smoking generally is illegal. But anywhere in Santa Cruz is difficult. You have to be 1,000 feet away from schools, you have to be 1,000 feet away from public parks, and generally the police can cook up something that they can show you're within 1,000 feet of. 1,000 feet is a long distance to be away from something. It's, a fifth of a mile? Not sure how many blocks it is, but it's hard to find such spots. And you would think that this is a violation of 215 as well. It hasn't been taken to court, in Proposition 215, because these restrictions are legislatively passed. I believe they were not passed in the initiative itself. So the initiative overrules the subsequent rules that have been made, but that doesn't stop cops from enforcing the rules, nor does it stop the city council from stopping the police or directing the city manager to direct the police, you know, to follow the real law, the initiatives that were passed by the citizens, not to mention the majority will of the community in Santa Cruz. We don't have a majority rule in Santa Cruz. We have rule by Dick Wilson's staff and a city council that likes to parade around as liberals at election time but acts quite differently. Witness, they're banning all medical marijuana applications for dispensaries, which passed on Tuesday. I may play a little of that, by the way, later, although it's pretty sad, and I got kind of sick of listening to it, and so I took some notes and then just stopped because there was, it's just amazing. There's no emergency that justifies the use of this kind of, the creation of this kind of law. They're claiming they're doing it because other right-wing city councils and other cities have done it and in some cities, and therefore that's their basis for doing it. Not that there's any danger from marijuana, not that marijuana should be treated differently than any other pharmaceutical or recreational drug products. I've explained this, you know, endlessly on the show. It makes no sense what they're doing unless you believe that you want to cater to people who are afraid of marijuana or believe it's a menace. And that sounds like Cynthia Matthews, Ryan Coonerty, Lynn Robinson, and also the rest of the city council. You know, Madrigal and Rotkin and Byers and Lane all went along with this shit. So there are your liberals for you. They are history. And, of course, that's nothing new as far as I can see. And it's been the case for a while. Continuing this article about the Kelly decision, which may sound a little obscure to folks because it's, let me see if I can read some more here. The court held that the limit currently in the law of 8 ounces plus 6 mature or 12 immature plants cannot burden a patient's legal defense of any specific quantity of cannabis or plants per its earlier Maurer decision. Let me see if I can decipher what that means. After medical immunity is raised, a prosecutor's burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt that the quantity was not reasonably related to the patient's current medical need or was intended for non-medical use. In other words, they can't say, well, the state says you can only have, you know, 8 ounces plus 6 mature, 12 immature plants. You got more than that. You got to show that you had a need for it. No. The prosecutor has to show, if they're going to try to charge you with anything, that it's not reasonably related. That the amount of marijuana you have, however huge it is, isn't related to your current medical need or it was intended for non-medical use. All that, of course, may change in November when we can avoid all this medical, non-medical shit, which is really a pain in the ass and completely absurd, when at least we get some kind of steps toward legalization. I don't even know if we can call this initiative full legalization. It doesn't release prisoners in jail. It doesn't require cities to allow businesses to sell marijuana if they provide, you know, reasonable protections and so forth. It's sort of in a way a halfway measure, but it is a measure that heads in that direction. And there's more in this West Coast Leaf, which I recommend you look at. It's free. You can get it in Logos. It comes out quarterly, I think, perhaps. And see if I can round up anything else about this particular subject. I've got my bunch of clippings here, but they're not in the order that I might want them to be. Let's see here. New no smoking signs to be posted. That's in Capitola. That doesn't interest me too much. I'll just continue with a couple other subjects, and I'll probably get back to marijuana in a moment. There was some discussion of the county judicial candidates on Sunday's Voices from the Village show, and I hope to chat with Ed Fry about that issue. He's the attorney who will be defending both Michelle and Becky on these other two women charged with singing sinister songs on the sidewalk. Yeah, in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz that offended some residents. He apparently was also interviewing five lawyers who are running for two judgeships coming up for a vote in May. And that show aired on Voices from the Village, a cable show, it doesn't say which channel, maybe Channel 27, I'm guessing, or 26. And I may be able to get the audio and play some of it or have him talk about some of these issues. Interesting to know, because if you're a voter, you might want to vote for the judge most likely to actually pay some attention to the Constitution. And since almost all the judges in the past 30 years have been prosecutors or come from the prosecutor's office and are not sympathetic to, at least I think, the constitutional rights of poor people generally, you know, you need a change. Not that there's likely to be one. Here's a story from Seattle. Appeals court blocks police use of stun gun on pregnant women. Backs. I was having a fit of hopefulness. Appeals court backs police use of stun gun on pregnant women. Three Seattle peace officers were justified when they used a stun gun on a pregnant mother who refused to sign a traffic ticket, a federal appeals court ruled Friday, in a case that prompted an incredulous dissent. This, again, is from the Sentinel from Saturday. Last Saturday. Malaika Brooks was driving her son to Seattle's African American Academy. It sounds like she was African American. In 2004, when she was stopped for doing 32 miles per hour in a school zone. Sounds like that's maybe 7 miles an hour over. I'm guessing. She insisted it was the car in front of her that was speeding and refused to sign the ticket because she thought she'd be admitting guilt. Rather than give her the ticket and let her go on her way, the officers decided to arrest her. One reached in, turned off her car, and dropped the keys on the floor. Brooks stiffened her arms against the steering wheel and told the officer she was pregnant, but refused to get out even after they threatened to stun her. The officers, Sergeant Stephen Damon, Officer Juan Ornelas, and Officer Donald Jones, then stunned her three times in the thigh, shoulder, and neck, and hauled her out of the car, laying her face down in the street. Brooks gave birth to a healthy baby 2 months later, but has permanent scars from the taser. Santa Cruz Police Department does have tasers and is authorized to use them. Attempts to get a fuller public discussion of tasers from Santa Cruz Mayor Mike Rotkin have so far been unavailing, by the way. Want to call Mike? Give him a call. Mayor Mike can be reached at 420-5023. That's 420-5023. Brooks sued the officers up in Seattle for violating her constitutional rights, and U.S. District Judge Richard Jones allowed the case to continue. He declined to grant the officers immunity for performing their official duties and said Brooks' rights were clearly violated. But in a 2-1 ruling Friday, March 26th, a panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals disagreed. Judges Cynthia Holcomb Hall and Diarmuid F. O'Scanlan held that officers were justified in making an arrest because Brooks was obstructing them and resisting arrest. The use of force was also justified because of the threat Brooks posed. Hall wrote, "It seems clear that Brooks was not going to be able to harm anyone with her car at a moment's notice." Nonetheless, some threat she might retrieve the keys and drive off erratically remained, particularly given her refusal to leave the car and her state of agitation. They also noted that the force used wasn't that serious because the taser was in touch mode rather than dart mode. And this is in the appeals court backs police use of stun gun on pregnant women. A woman. I notice it doesn't mention anything about the racial composition of the cops involved. And the race of the person being, not to mention the gender of the person being tased or tasered. And it also doesn't go into the, it mentions that there was an incredulous dissent, but there's no mention of the dissent. I guess maybe the Sentinel left that one out, or maybe I've got to look up the longer article on the AP, and maybe I'll do that. at some point. Again, if you're interested, this is a stun gun decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals, Ninth Circuit, last Friday. That's the same court that found the Santa Cruz City Council was okie-dokie in arresting me. It looks like we have a caller. I'm sorry. Looks like the phones have not been turned on. My apologies. Let's get to the caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Sorry about the phones being off.
Oh, it's okay. I actually am calling from New Jersey.
Oh, well, welcome.
I download your show a lot. And,
oh, New Jersey. Well,
mm-hmm.
I hope things are better in New Jersey.
Well, not really. There's a lot of poverty in the city of Camden where I work. And
what kind of work do you do?
I'm a bus driver.
Oh, wow. I guess you see a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But I have been downloading your show for a while now, so I just wanted to call and say how much I appreciate it, and it's a really good show. And I think it's got a real universal appeal to it, and it's really interesting to listen to. And I appreciate the Cop Watch stuff, too, that you guys do. Really points out some of the brutality that occurs in this country from police. And I was really disappointed to hear about the medical marijuana ban on a new dispensary. That was really disappointing. And for anybody on your city council who supports that, it's definitely not for progress.
What's up in Camden and the state of New Jersey? Is it still totally illegal to use any marijuana? What's the
We just passed on medical marijuana here.
That's
yes,
right.
I thank California for, too, and I really like the progressive things that go on there. I mean, this medical marijuana in California was really a great thing, especially it seems like they're pretty liberal with their in California, it seems they're pretty liberal with as far as people that can get it. Like, there aren't, like, very specific diseases or whatever that you have to have. Like, here, we just passed it in New Jersey, but it's very restrictive. You can only get it if you have certain diseases.
Yeah, I heard it's very limited. Actually, there's an interesting...
Yeah.
If you follow my show... What's your first name?
David,
if you follow my show, and thank you for calling, by the way,
sure.
It goes without saying, but you may have heard Craig Canada, who's a local medical marijuana, I would call him an expert. He's also been homeless. He's very temperamental, not to mention manic depressive, but that doesn't alter his expertise. And he writes for a website called examiner.com, in which he actually talks about the New Jersey law. And I've mentioned that on the air at some point. I don't know if you were listening or not at that time, but if you go to his website or to the examiner.com website, you can find more on how he feels this law actually has made it worse for New Jersey patients. 99% of the New Jersey, or I think it's 90% of medical marijuana patients in New Jersey do not have any protection because of the very limited nature of the law. Is that your assessment? What do you think?
That's my understanding. I'm ashamed to say that I really don't know that much about it. It really wasn't... I haven't really been reading the local papers lately. And... for a while, because I have, you know, some things that I've been doing, working a lot, and some other personal things. And plus, I don't really like to read the local paper that much.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I've got the article here online. New Jersey delivers crushing defeat for medical marijuana, and it's the largest demographic of medical marijuana patients. Yeah, it's the largest demographic, according to this, of medical marijuana patients who use it for pain, about 60%. The second largest is those who use it for psychiatric conditions, including anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress. In California, about 30%, according to Canada, of medical marijuana patients, Craig Canada, use it for psychiatric conditions. New Jersey's medical marijuana law, by excluding pain and psychiatric conditions, will impact about 4% of New Jersey's medical marijuana patients. In other words, 96% get screwed. You might want to look that over, and
Examiner?
It's in the, yes, it's in examiner.com website, and okay. check it out.
I'll check it out because I'm interested in learning more about it, you know, since I live here. But it seems like they're only going to open up 3 dispensaries for the whole state, and this is like one of the most densely populated states, I think, in the country.
Now, is that because local cities are trying to restrict it by their own legislation, like Camden, or is it because... there's some sort of... I've got a friend who was arrested in New Jersey in the 70s. He talked about the corruption in the police department there and so forth. I don't know if that's just where he was or whether he was prejudiced or whether it's still the case. But is there an attempt in New Jersey to, by localities like there is here in California, to restrict where medical marijuana dispensaries can open?
Not as far as I know. It really hasn't been taught. It's kind of weird because there's a lot of people don't even know that it happened, and it wasn't really publicized or spoken about in the newspapers or on the local news. You know, it's kind of like something that came in, and they're really not going to let it be what I would like it to be. I guess it's going to have to be more citizen involvement, you know, to force it to go more progressive. I don't know of any campaigns to make it
right.
The law more known.
You know, as a bus driver, how long have you been a bus driver?
Too long. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of...
Several decades, or...?
15 years.
And are the unions strong in New Jersey that protect you in terms of salary, wages, benefits? How's that for you?
So far it's been, but we're facing some pressure now. We didn't get a raise on our last contract,
mm-hmm.
and the union has cozied up to the political structure.
Of course.
So
do you own your own
never
house?
Really, you know, it's kind of stressful to have a living wage job and then work in a really poor city.
You feel you feel guilty, or do you feel like you stand out, or?
I just feel like the only reason that I get. That I am paid as much as I am is because I'm just lucky to be in a union, and my job is no more, you know, the skills that I have are no more valuable, you know, than the people who ride my bus and make, you know,
kind of a lottery then for you. You just happen to luck out.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of homeless folks in Camden.
Yes. There's a lot of homeless people in Camden. There's a homeless camp next to the off-ramp from 676, the highway, which is being allowed. People used to be allowed to sleep in the train stations, and I think they still can sleep in the train station when it's cold. They have restricted some of the space around the transportation center recently where you can't sit anymore. But there's a lot of drug addicts in Camden because that's where the county services are. And one thing I wanted to say too about your show is it's your street and your street interviews
uh-huh.
are really interesting, and I really find the people fascinating that you talk to. It's really enlightening to hear that.
Well, if you come up with anything at your end, you know, feel free to, pass it my way. Also, do you have any free radio stations in your area? I mean, are there any? I think they're a little tougher on the East Coast than they are on the West Coast on pirate radio stations. We're pirate radio, as you know.
Right. Yeah.
Are there any such stations in your area or in New Jersey? You know.
In Philadelphia, the only one that I know of is in Philadelphia. In West Philadelphia, I forgot.
And how about food not bombs? Do they operate in your area?
I don't know of them.
You know that food not bomb. You probably know what it is, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've heard my show.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that they're brave and strong people.
Well, I appreciate hearing from people who like this show, David. And I let me give you a chance go ahead.
One thing before I forget: are you interviews with your Mayor Rodkin?
Yes.
I know that you sometimes wonder why you even bother. And thanks for putting up with him anyway, because it's really good to hear that, just to get the words from his mouth, and just to hear what a I really think he's a hypocrite, and he's really, it's a frustrating to hear him talk sometimes. But I mean, you know,
you think it's important to do that?
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. It's important. You know, if I wouldn't really waste too much time with him, yeah.
Is it important or is it not? What do you think I should? I mean, for example, I'm thinking of doing a follow-up interview with him. I've been sending him emails for the last 3 months, trying to get some kind of response to things like I mentioned tasers, but also the powers of the police in terms of how they can order, how they deal with citizen arrests downtown. I earlier talked about how police kind of are using merchants and residents to move away, move along, not just street performers, but also homeless people in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm thinking of getting in touch with them on that. But let me thank you and move on.
Thank you for giving me
time. Yeah, call again if you want, if you've got some more thoughts. And, you know, keep that praise coming in there, David.
Yeah, and a peace to Santa Cruz.
Hey, thanks.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Thank you, David. Good to know that somebody's listening somewhere, particularly in New Jersey, although that's long way away. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're on for another hour and 10 minutes. And you could be on too, 427-3772. If you want to catch me off air, you want to leave a message or looking for information, or you got something that you don't want to perhaps publicize immediately, 423-4833. 423-HUFF is the number, 423-HUFF. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. What else I got here? I pulled a couple articles here about a guy named Rick Hofstetter in the Sentinel has written a letter. He doesn't like the decision of 2 weeks ago when Judge Volkman threw out the utterly bogus case against the two homeless musicians who we've talked about on this show. They are enjoined from sleeping downtown. Everybody is, it's illegal for everybody to sleep everywhere in the city who is outside or in a vehicle. Homelessness essentially is criminal at night if you try to sleep. But that's after 11 o'clock at night. These two got the special focus of the city as a kind of a sop to the merchants, where the city attorney got an injunction against them where if they sleep once, they will go to jail for 5 days, in theory, for contempt of court. And so he brought three tickets in to try to bring four citations or police reports showing not sleeping at night but sleeping during the day, which is legal, not illegal, because if they tried to make sleeping any time illegal, I guess they were afraid that would run afoul of even the most nearsighted judicial character who is looking at an appeal, even though similar laws in other cities have been overturned under the Jones decision, as I've mentioned before, which is now no longer a precedent but is a settlement. But that the reasoning still follows. It's cruel and unusual punishment to arrest people who are homeless at night for sleeping when there is clearly no legal shelter for the overwhelming majority of them. And that is just, common sense and common decency. But it's not being followed in Santa Cruz by City Attorney Barisoni. This little letter criticized the judge for essentially throwing out not the injunction that Barisoni secured, but the attempt to convict them of two particular cases of sleeping where they were sleeping during the day and they had their possessions next to them. And the cops involved, in order to cook this up as a charge, said it was camping because they had their possessions there and they intended to remain overnight. They had no evidence they intended to remain overnight other than the fact that their possessions were with them. So the judge said that's not enough. But the response of this letter writer is the following. Judge Volkman's decision throwing out an injunction against a couple with a long history of violating city ordinances creates one more link in the long chain of challenges facing Santa Cruz. Now, of course, they weren't convicted of violating the downtown ordinances. He doesn't specify which ordinances they were even accused of violating, and indeed the only ones that they are actually enjoined by judicial order from violating the downtown area is the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and the camping ban. Laws that are clearly unconstitutional to anyone who's in the 21st century or even in the 20th century, but not to merchants who want to use whatever tools at hand to get rid of those eyesores that are hanging around downtown. Judge Volkman was looking for a gap in the law, Rick Hofstetter, the letter writer, writes, that would not require him to hold this couple accountable for their actions. Not really. Volkman actually was looking for a way to convict them. Otherwise, he would have summarily dismissed the case when such a motion was made at mid-trial. He wanted to find a way to show the city, you know, that they could convict. It looks like somebody just tried to call in. Try again if you'd like, 427-3772. And again, my apologies to those who weren't able to call in the first half hour. I usually do have the volume up on the ringer. There we go. Hello, you're on Free Radio. And it looks like somebody's... Oh, they got a wrong number. Maybe wants to talk to me off air. 423-HUFF is a good number to call, as I said before, if you want to talk to me off air. Let's do a few street interviews. Maybe give David in New Jersey something to listen to, and the rest of you as well. And again, you can call in 427-3772. We got an hour left in the show, so you too can be live on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I finally made it into the Civic Auditorium. It's a huge scene. There are, oh gosh, several dozen tables, information and copies, identification, benefits, advocacy, employment.
What I'm talking about here, and it's a little hard to tell because the tape is not the best quality, is what's called Project Connect. It's a day of providing homeless services to people in the Civic Auditorium, one of the largest indoor public spaces in town. And I was there giving out flyers and talking to people and interviewing people toward the end of the Project Connect day, which ran from 10 to 4, I think, last Tuesday, day before yesterday. I think it was Tuesday. Maybe it was Monday, 30th. Tuesday. So I had been rather cynical about it because I'm usually when people say, hey, you're going to Project Connect, what a great idea, my response is, yeah, charity once a year, you know, blow me. You know, thank you very much. But I had to admit that a lot of people, although there was really inadequate treatment of some folks because they didn't really, maybe they didn't anticipate the number of people that were coming, or maybe they, you know, only had limited resources, but they seemed to have a lot. The census was involved in all this. There were a lot of census people around, and it was organized a lot by Don Lane, council member, former mayor, homeless service center board of directors member, and guy who's been accessible to us in Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in terms of at least last year talking to us before he ignored everything we said and passed the anti-homeless laws, anyway. But, you know, at least he chatted about it, and he raised a few issues at city council before he just sort of took the dive, which said, you know, oh, it's okay, let's expand the forbidden zones for sitting, let's make it illegal to sit on a bench for more than an hour, let's make three infractions an automatic misdemeanor if you don't attend to them in court, and so forth. Bad laws, bad judgment, and really bad faith if he wants to claim to be a homeless advocate. and I don't think he is. But in this case, he did help put together this thing, which provided access to IDs, phone cards, some food, some veteran services, I think, and, well, other stuff for homeless folks for one day.
Massage area, medical check-in, women's resources, behavioral health, drugs, probation services. It's stupid they don't have this, you know, like, I don't know, weekly, or maybe even, you know, every day, because after all, this doesn't just happen to be a need once a year. I'm talking with
Nathan.
And Nathan, you have a bag in your hand. Looks like some
science diet.
For your doggy.
For Fred.
And do you have food for yourself that they've also given you, or just your dog?
Yeah, no, they gave me some spaghetti and some fruit cups and stuff like that.
I think another bag with
banana.
Stuff.
Yeah, some freshy socks, always crucial.
Of course they're offering you a legal place to sleep tonight, I'm sure.
Are they?
No, I don't think so. I haven't heard it yet anyway. But we do have a council member, Don Lane, over there. I'm sure he'll be able to help you out.
Yeah, I'm sure. For
far
sure.
Out, actually.
Far
he'll
out.
Push the downtown ordinances and make it illegal to sit down in increasingly number of forbidden zones become banned from sitting.
Yeah, it's feel a little pampered today for sure, but yeah, I mean, it would be nice to be able to sleep legally. That would be a good push. I think maybe if we could get...
How's it going?
Good.
Okay.
A little interruption there. So anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying if we could get this many homeless people together to maybe stand up for their rights, and that'd be pretty awesome.
It would. Or even have a one-fifth of this number of service providers actually come out and support basic rights for homeless people, you know.
Yeah, on a regular basis.
Or even an irregular basis.
Yeah, right? For sure. But this is a wonderful day. It's really cool that they're helping us out like this. And, yeah. I'm getting a massage. That's pretty badass.
Massage on.
Yeah, I need one. I got beat up by a cop the other night again.
Which cop?
It was a sheriff this time.
Were you drinking again, Nathan?
Yeah, I slipped out of my handcuffs, and so he kicked me in the leg like a pro wrestler. I was trying to pull my pants up. He said I was resisting arrest, but I don't know.
Why were your pants down?
Because they took my belt.
I see. So you belted them, eh? Well,
yeah.
They belted you, it looks like. So were you struck? Were you? What happened?
I was kicked and then taken to the ground and just kind of manhandled a little, but I didn't put up any fight or anything, so I just got a little rub, you know, concrete burn on the face, stuff like that. But nothing.
Are you charged with anything, or did they just dump you in the drunk tank?
No charges again. Dump me in the drunk tank. It's always a party with the Santa Cruz PD.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
We're talking with
Sandy Clancy.
Sandy, you're working here today, and you're doing some cooking.
Right, I'm doing some cooking, and I've served cooking down at the Elm Street Mission for a long time.
Right.
And so I have a heart for the homeless people, and I want to see those people treated respectfully, and they're part of our community, and we have to find some way to help them, not abuse them, and, you know, show them some love and try to solve some of their problems, because you never know when you'll be out there yourself.
You know, one can't disagree with you. Have you seen something? You were looking at this flyer I'm giving out, Connect with Real Homeless Civil Rights. What? Anything that struck you particularly?
Well, I haven't had time to read the whole thing, but I've just heard bad things about the city sending out people to pick up their camping gear and to take away their sleeping bags, and we try to provide sleeping bags for the people here in this community. Community from the Santa Cruz Bible Church. We have provided probably 8,000 sleeping bags over the years, and we do that because we know that they get wet, and we know that you can't get a sleeping bag dry once it gets wet, and we also know that they get those sleeping bags taken away from them. And, you know, I just feel really bad when those people are out on the street and they don't have something to keep them warm at night, and so we've tried to help them out that way, and I want to see those policies. That's abuse to me when they take those sleeping bags away from them or their camping gear.
You know, and it kind of occurs to me after the fact that if this Project Connect happens again next year, it's a perfect time to really have a prepared protest where service providers are invited, let's say, to march across the street to City Hall and maybe set up a tent city. because on April 15th, there's going to be no more shelter at the Armory, and there'll be less than, I'd say less than 100 places, maybe less than 80 places, maybe less than 60 places of walk-in emergency shelter. And I don't even know if there'll be that, because the only emergency shelter that, I guess they're going to restart the Armory. I'm not sure if they're starting the Interface Satellite Shelter Program again or not. They have the Paul Lee Loft, but that has a waiting list. So it's not even a walk-in program for people to come to at night if they need a place to stay. You have to get on a waiting list, and you might get in, and you might not. And it's certainly, you know, given the fact that there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz who are homeless each night in the city, by my estimate, which is, you know, kind of a wild estimate. It's hard to say what the actual numbers are. We need things like a tent city, both to dramatize the shelter shortage and to dramatize the absurdity of having laws that criminalize sleeping anywhere, that essentially criminalize sleeping no matter where you're sleeping. Obviously, sleeping anywhere and everywhere doesn't have to be the alternative. Sleeping somewhere is the alternative, and that has to be allowed, and it's not in Santa Cruz. And, you know, we set up a tent city back in 2007 on the lawns of City Hall, and we're there for 6 days. Reno has had a tent city, I'm reading in the papers, for the last 18 months, and we heard Camden, New Jersey, from caller David, has a tent city that's going on or was going on there. And this is, of course, our liberal city that we have no such thing. We said have, you know, more funding of people, police agents, of Parks and Rec thugs, frankly. We have guys who are supposed to be protecting the environment who are despoiling homeless people and destroying their property, like Ranger John Wallace, who sends out his crews to tear up and destroy tents and property after posting it, he says. And they probably make a good faith effort to post it for, what, 3 days or so, then they feel they have the right to destroy it. Don't think so. Not according to state law and not according to the federal Kincaid decision in Fresno. But as of yet, we don't have the attorney backing to overturn that. We'll see if that changes. But again, these service providers, and you can hear Sandy, this woman, talking, some of them are very sympathetic. And might not mind, you know, walking across the street and joining homeless people in a tent city, at least for a period of time. When you have a bunch of people together in a huge gathering like this, it is a critical mass, and it's an opportunity for, you know, perhaps for the future. But who knows? We'll see what happens.
Whatever.
Well, we have to help the Downtown Association pretty up its image downtown. Show some respect for your local businesses. I mean, after all, as they say.
Yeah, well, I've been a business person in a community with problems like this. And, you know, everybody has to work together. You can't just tell the people to go away. That doesn't work.
Particularly, there's nowhere to go.
If there's nowhere to go, exactly.
Well, again, we've been talking with?
Sandy Clancy.
Thanks, Sandy.
Yeah.
What's your name?
I don't want to do that.
Anonymously, perhaps?
I don't want to do that.
No problem, man. But good luck. We're talking with a guy who has a service dog. What's your dog's name?
Maggie.
And who are you?
I'm Scott Brady.
And Scott, you say that even though you have a service dog who says service dog on him, you still get stopped?
I get hassled wherever I go. Restaurants, the homeless shelter hassled me for almost 3 weeks, and then finally I had to show
them. You can't read the word service dog on your dog? Or?
It's they're supposed to provide reasonable accommodations, but their reasonable accommodations means you have to change your rules to allow service dogs, and it was difficult for them to do that.
Did they change their rules?
They did after about 2 weeks.
And how long have their rules been better?
About 3 months now.
Oh, that's good. So, and there's been a real change. And what changes did you ask be made with respect to service dogs?
To be able to allow service dogs into the shelter. The Americans with Disabilities Act gives me full rights and protection to take her anywhere. And some people just don't recognize that. Restaurants, restaurants. I take her to church with me. She goes into the hospitals. But I get questioned all the time.
How are the police treating you?
They've stopped me once on Pacific Street.
Did they require documentation?
I did. They did, and I had to show them her identification.
Now, does the ADA allow you to avoid that situation, or do you have to show it?
ADA says that the only thing I need to provide is the fact that she's a service dog and what her task is. Other than that, I don't have to provide anything else.
You don't have to show any documentation?
No, we don't.
Are the police respecting this locally or not?
So far, yes, except for that one time.
And that one time they did require you to show papers?
Yes.
You don't have to remember the name of the officer involved?
I do not, no.
Oh, dear. Well, we wanted to give him a special...
Thank you.
Yes, of a different kind. We've been talking with...
Scott Brady.
Thank you, Scott.
And, you know, I have to say that one of the things I commended Sergeant Harms for, and I'm actually filed a joint commendation complaint on another subject with respect to Sergeant Harms more recently, but one of the things I commended him for was his apparently, this is according to his report, advising one of the staff of Hoffman's restaurant when she wanted him, the person and a dog removed from the sidewalk, that not only did the person have the right to have their service dog on the sidewalk, but they had the right to come into the restaurant with it, and he would enforce that right. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Mad Mike the Wonder Dog. I want to talk.
Hey, Mad Mike the Wonder Dog. Are you going to be criticizing our police department again? I don't allow criticism of the police department on the air, you know.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Fuck the police. Fuck the law.
Did you say...
I think this town needs to end a month, you know. They're doing an extreme offensive against the homeless, and we're fighting back, you know. We're gonna booby trap our camps, and they come through, they're going to blow their ass to bits. Can I say that on the radio?
You can say whatever you want on the radio. Of course, if you make specific threats, they may track you down and, shall we say, prosecute you, particularly if you want to threaten Obama. That's particularly a federal crime.
I like to threaten Dick Cheney and Bush and...
I think that's also a federal crime.
Motherfucking thugs.
Yeah, well, thugs in power are, you know, you should not... Don't be mean to thugs in power. They need your support.
No, I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about the past regime.
Well, why don't you talk about... Hold it. Wait a minute, Mr. Black Man. Why don't you talk about the guy in power who's sending people over to murder Afghanis and keeping people in Iraq murdering there? Talk about him, please.
He's just trying to finish. He's trying to do a little house cleaning of the bullshit that the Bush administration...
No, he's not. No, he's not. No, he's escalating the situation. Sorry, I don't buy that bullshit.
He's going to attack Iran next, right?
He's certainly threatening to, you know, he's threatening to, you know, impose sanctions. He's going into Yemen and Somalia. You know, he's setting up for new detention camps in Bagram and elsewhere. He's you know, he's not releasing people from Guantanamo as promised and closing Guantanamo. You know, where are you going to put them? What do you mean, where are you going to put them? They are not accused of any crimes. You know, you release them unless you've got criminal charges or you've got charges against them. You know, I'm sorry. That's the way it is.
Some of them are criminals, you know, and they didn't get their trespassing or spitting on the sidewalk.
Yeah, they got there because Afghani warlords sold them to the American troops. That's how some of them got there. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't know why you're defending this kind of crap. This doesn't sound like you, Mad Mike. Have you been?
Well, I just got on the air. I'm with the media whore right now, and I'm just cruising around.
I see. So the Democratic Party kidnapped you and brainwashed you. You're an Obamazoid now. Is that the story?
No, I'm not no minor Obama nothing. I'm an anarchist. I'm a pirate. I'm a revolutionary. Fuck the system.
Well, what?
You know, I'd be glad when we smash the system.
Well, Obama is the head of the system, so watch who you praise. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, right now he's just. I think as long as you do a little house cleaning, and we get those cocksuckers for war crimes, and get them sent to Guantanamo Bay to damn self, I'd be happy. You know, but. Impeachment or whatever the shit is already over with. It's too late for that. But
Mad Mike, I got to tell you, Mad Mike, you have an interview coming up on this tape, so I'm going to cut you off quickly unless you have something new information for me. So
new information. So you got me on tape. You're going to put me on tape? All right. I'd like to hear that.
Well, you're, you know, we did an interview with you a couple days ago, so we'll be playing shortly.
I just want to say that all these homeless people should keep their shit clean and their camps clean and stuff like that and do their dirt or whatever, going to shoot dope, drink, do that elsewhere, and keep the shit clean, then maybe pigs won't fuck with you when they come down to your hooch. They normally leave me alone. 99% of the time they leave me alone unless they're looking for me for crimes.
And maybe Santa Claus will visit you again next year as well.
Yeah, right. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting more Obama money. That's what I'm looking for.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you and everybody else. But become a military contractor. He'll give you big bucks.
I already did that. Been there, done that.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Killing is my business. His business is good.
All right, man.
All right.
That was Mad Mike the Wonder Dog back in town. And keeping an eye out for civil rights. He's often around with a video camera checking things out. He's has spent a lot of time in prison. And he's, you know, speaks his mind. So you can speak your mind, too. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And let's hear some more from Project Connect from 2 days ago in the Civic Auditorium.
Thank you. I'm talking with Ken Cole, who's with the Housing Authority. He's actually the head of the Housing Authority, getting some information on how the actual event happened this year, this being the first year that Project Connect has opened up here in Santa Cruz. Though before you say, Ken, it's actually happened in different places. Hey.
Yes, it's happened around the country.
And today, this time it happened because Don Lane, our council member, put in a particular effort to help out there.
I think Don Lane was probably one of the key spirits of this event today.
And we're in the Civic, which is a huge auditorium, the largest probably in the city. And you're getting a pretty steady flow of folks. Were there more earlier?
Oh, yes. We're in the later stages. It's slowing down now. It's slowed down quite a bit. So it was quite heavy around the mid, you know, from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock, it was pretty heavy.
I missed the action, is what you're saying. My opportunity to get masses, lead them on the streets.
You know, there's probably been, I would guess, about 1,000 people have come through.
And as a Housing Authority guy who has had 10 years prior experience with the Homeless Service Center, what's the situation? Just, I know it's really hard to estimate, with homeless people in Santa Cruz City and County, up, down, in the middle, is the economic crisis creating more, or is the Downtown Association able to drive them all away?
Well, I think there's no doubt there's more homeless in our community. I mean, I think almost everybody has somebody they know who's lost a job. Many people have somebody they know who's lost a home. So, guaranteed there's more homeless.
And when they ask you, I'm sure they do, how many homeless people in the county, how many in the city, what kind of estimates do you give?
Yeah, I defer to the experts on the counting part of it.
And what experts would you recommend folks go to?
I'd go to, I think that the experts should be the city government and the county government. And I think they're the ones to answer that question.
And have you heard any estimates recently that they've...
No, but I did hear recently that Santa Cruz housing market rates as the third.
And before we leave that subject, that's Ken Cole, who for a decade was the executive director of the Homeless Services Center, very unsympathetic to huffsters, pretty much. We had a kind of a springtime period with Ken Cole when he was the vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force in 1999. But when we asked him to back up demands on the then police chief Steve Belcher, he would not do that. I guess he was concerned with his political support among merchants and residents and people on the Homeless Services Center board. He always clarified that being a homeless service provider is different than being a homeless advocate, and so he didn't stand up much. For example, he didn't testify against the anti-homeless laws in 2002, 2003, and 2009, and hasn't since, actually. So you notice he doesn't give numbers as to how many homeless people there are. I keep asking him. He keeps ducking. Anyway, but he has got other things to say. Let's hear what he's got to say.
Most expensive in the nation.
But we're only
behind Honolulu and San Francisco.
Well, that means we're number one, right? We're best.
Which is another reason you should expect a lot of homeless people. If the price of housing is out of reach.
How about foreclosures? Any sense of what's going on with that here in the county?
We've seen a lot of foreclosures, and particularly in the rental market, because the little bit of mortgage relief that's available does not go to people who own rental homes. So we've actually seen a lot of small-time rental owners go out of business and lose their houses.
Wow, in the last year?
In the last 6 to 9 months in particular.
Any predictions for the next 6 months?
More of the same. Nice talking to you, Robert.
Thank you, Ken Cole.
Are you oppressed?
Hey, Mike. So we're talking with
Sierra Pax.
And Sierra, I see you have a friend with you in a wheelchair.
Absolutely. His name is Mike, really good friend of mine. Hopefully,
That's good. So you were telling me about Mike that Mike's having some problems getting services here.
Yeah, basically people here are able to get emergency housing for 30 days, but Mike needs a caretaker and is not eligible to get emergency housing because they cannot house his caretaker as well, and he needs 24-hour care.
So what is Mike's disability?
Basically,
broken back. And what do they tell you? You know, sorry, fella, come back next year. Or what do they say?
I'll never walk again.
Well, but I mean, as far as getting housing or accommodations or service,
come here today.
And what have you found here today?
Not a damn thing, man. Turndowns.
And what to whom did you apply?
I don't know, 3 or 4 different places. You know, I'm not sure where I went. I would just push there, then push there, then push there. And
was Sierra with you?
Sierra, no, she wasn't. I just hooked up with her. I'm glad I found her. She's like my best friend.
Yeah.
And my caretaker's over there in the line over there. Big tall guy. He'll wave, I think. No, he missed it.
Yeah, basically, also too, I'm gonna start taking over and helping caretake because it's a 24-hour job, and you know. But it would be Calvin who would be staying there with him at night. I'd be helping out during the day, so it's not my need for housing. But Calvin also needs to stay with him 24 hours a day, and so would be staying with him at night. And so there's not housing available for the two of them when there is just for single persons. And the hospital actually pushed them out and didn't want to keep covering for the hospital bills. And so now he's outside. They're covering slightly for motel, but it's the housing available for disabled persons with caretakers, not having to put them in a convalescent home, which, you know, Medi-Cal doesn't cover and things like that. And so it's being able to find housing, like not even and something like an SLE or something like that. The sober living is not, you know, necessary, but is having something where there's housing available where people can come in, where it's not just them, but the caretaker is needed. And it's very frustrating because, I mean, there's other people who are struggling, but when someone's stuck in a wheelchair and they need a caretaker, you know, they can't just curl up on the ground with a blanket because, you know.
I've seen people in wheelchairs sleeping outside, I gotta tell you.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And there's people here, you know, who don't even have caretakers because they're, you know, they're not necessarily eligible. But yeah, my, you know, it's amazing that there's people can get, you know, 30, basically, people can get 30-day emergency services, which is great for them, but with someone who needs to have someone with them for around-the-clock care, and they're not able to get housing services, then obviously it's a concern. And so luckily, you know, like I said, I'll be able to, you know, help this gentleman and start caretaking more. I'm really good. I'm just rambling. But,
You made some good points. Again, we've been talking with
Sierra Pax.
Thanks, Sierra. We have Mad Mike the Wonder Dog, or Mad Dog the Wonder Mike. We're not sure which.
I'm interviewing you. You're interviewing me. Fuck the police.
He has his video camera. And Mike, you say that something interesting has happened outside.
I got it on tape. This officer coming up, and everybody he saw homeless sitting there, smoking a cigarette or sitting there, whatever, made them all get up and go. Says no. And Becky jumped all in their shit, saying there's no ordinance or nothing prohibiting people from sitting on this wall. And it just, in fact, it invites you to sit on it. I said, if you don't want anybody to sit on it, why don't you just put black.
Now, where was this wall? In front of City Hall?
City Hall, right, you know, the wall on City Hall that goes around City Hall?
City Hall wall, a new forbidden zone. Right?
Yeah, I said, why don't you put broken glass or razor wire on the son of a bitch?
That's
you
don't a want good to idea, to, that's going to work. That'll get rid of those homeless types.
Becky got in the ass, said there's no ordinance.
And in fact, Becky is correct. There is no ordinance that prohibits people from sitting on the wall, which is actually at, I don't know, a little higher than knee height, thigh height. It's actually intended for sitting, and we used to sit there during our protests. Why Officer, did he say Officer Azua? I'm not sure why the officer involved did that. Maybe he was misinformed or just didn't like the people clustering, or too many homeless people made him nervous, or maybe he got a complaint. But there's no, the City Hall is in a special district in Santa Cruz. It's not in the downtown district, and therefore, for example, you can lie down on the lawn at City Hall, whereas if you lie down on the sidewalk elsewhere, even if you're not blocking it, in at least in the downtown area, that's been made a crime under the anti-homeless ordinances, which were voted, supported unanimously by the current city council.
is saying you can't, it's prohibited to sit here.
Did anybody stay or did they all run away?
They all ran away. Everybody got their bags and left and stuff like that. And fuck the police. What's his name? Velasquez or whatever his name is.
Was the officer involved?
Yeah, it was some yuppie sitting there checking his email on his laptop or on his texting somebody and with a suit on. They would have never said shit to him. But they see some people who look homeless and they do this shit. They think they can get away with it. We're going to take back this fucking town, motherfuckers. Class war.
Yeah, there you have it. That's Mad Mike the Wonder Guard.
Another option.
Update from Sierra.
Homeless Services Center, it looks like they might be able to put the two gentlemen up in the loft together. Yeah, so that'll
be a 30-day deal.
Exactly, and they're coming in tomorrow, and hopefully things will get worked out.
What about you? Do you get to go in the loft? Do I get to come with you?
No. Hopefully. No. Hopefully I'm gonna come talk to Daniel and see maybe if he can work something out for me, too. So,
okay,
the waiting list might be a little bit long, but I'm a capable...
So you're outside yourself?
Absolutely, unfortunately.
Got from UCSC graduate to new leaf worker to a homeless person.
Actually, one quarter left to finish at UCSC. Half the reason I'm here is to see if they can figure out... I had surgery in June, racked up 3 months of rent, and was not able to finish my last quarter because I owed him rent, and so now I have to reapply.
Now you have wonderful health care. Everything will be fine now that Obama's... Was it 2014? You might get... depending on how high the insurance rates are, we'll get back to you on that, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, Robert. And we wouldn't be out here without you, man. I mean, just...
You probably would.
Awesome.
You probably would.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't be out here on the radio getting this stuff
that's
around.
Possible, although hopefully somebody else would take my place.
You know what? I saw you on Metro, the Santa Cruz Metro, too. At least... Hopefully they don't put the word out there too much. Then they might try to come shut you down, but they won't be able to find you.
Thanks, Sarah.
I'm not telling.
All right, baby. I'll get in touch.
Do we ever need a field hand on the
Let's go over this way.
Out on the street. Ready, Roman?
Thanks, Sierra. Good luck, Mike.
Thank you.
We have a second report after getting Mad Mike the Wonder Dog's woof woofy kind of report. We now have Becky Johnson, who Mike mentioned was, should we say, chastising poor, was it Officer or Sergeant Vasquez?
It was Officer Vasquez.
What did the good officer say?
He had no sergeant stripes on his sleeves that
hopefully
I would
won't be getting any soon.
Apparently he just decided that all the people sitting on the very low, wide concrete wall surrounding City Hall was just something that people could not sit on. It wasn't not a sittable surface, according to him. And he was chasing everybody away from there.
Trying to protect the surface of City Hall.
And then there was a man who was lying down on the sidewalk, and he said, "You can't lie down here," which could only be true if he was lying obstructively. I said, "Officer Vasquez, you told this man he can't lie there when he certainly legally can lie there." And he says, "Well, you can't lie down anywhere." And I go, no, the sit-lie ordinance applies only to the downtown area.
And to the City Hall area.
City Hall is not in the downtown area.
This town needs an enema.
And Officer Amelia, Officer Vasquez apologized and invited everyone to come back.
He said, "Well, you act like you know the law." And I said, "Well, I don't know what I act like, but I do know some laws fairly well, and others I don't know at all. But I, you know, invite you to show me any ordinance that says you cannot lie down at City Hall."
At which point he whipped out his book and showed you a new law created by Mike Rontgen, perhaps.
Not yet.
Yeah, that could be coming up next week.
I think it'd be more like Don Lane and Ryan Coonerty that would cook that one up.
Don Lane actually gave us this huge event, according to Ken Cole, who I just spoke to. Lane, of course, is a council member who has been seen, cavorting, or I should say, consorting with different folks here. He's been here at least for the last hour when I've been here. So
yeah, he's a regular hero.
Yeah. So you sound... Well, there he is. There's Don talking with Micah. Hey there, Don Lane. Don Lane! He waved back at us.
Yeah, he's a real charmer.
Yes. Now, why are you speaking so sarcastically about poor Don Lane?
Well, I'm pissed at him about the smoking ordinance that he said that he wanted people only to be smoking in in their private spaces. That means this is a guy who's sitting on the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors, and he's saying that homeless people can't smoke in public places ever. He said, I want to make smoking banned from all the places where people are. To me, sounds like banning homeless people who smoke, and that ordinance already is so massively selectively enforced, and so unpopular among homeless people, since none of them were consulted when that ordinance was passed, and they used phony stats about health concerns to do it as well. So I'm not too happy with Don.
You don't like Lane's concern about protecting the health of our homeless community. What else do you have against poor Don?
Well, he needs to come out against the sleeping ban if he's actually supports homeless health. You know, it's to his credit that he's been on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center. That
is it?
To me, in my mind, it is, because they do provide necessary and needed services, and for those that they help, they do help them. But it's for him to not realize that those services are woefully inadequate, given the need, and to criminalize the rest, is to be, you know, he wants to be commended for helping a few people, and then to give a pass for the horror he's inflicting on the vast majority of them. And to me, he's a huge hypocrite.
There you have it. It's thumbs down for Don Lane, who I've called Gone Lame, the city councilman and Homeless Services Center board of directors member, as well as apparently the big man behind this event, which is impressive. I wasn't here earlier, but Ken Cole said that they've served over 1,000 people.
And they put some slow cyanide in the food, so they can feed all the homeless bums and kill them. They want us out of town anyway. I mean, some motive. He ain't doing this for no reason whatsoever. He's doing
paranoid fantasies of Mad Mike.
I'm waiting for another shoe to drop. You know, fuck the police, fuck Don Lane and his bullshit. You know, they could help the homeless out a lot by stop fucking persecuting, beating the bushes, trying to hound them and running them out of town, taking their property and all this shit, and writing out stupid ass.
Excuse me, that would run afoul of the Downtown Association.
Tickets, yeah, right.
What's wrong with
tickets.
You? Don't you understand? This is a community we're living in here. We can't have these homeless people running around like rats.
Because they're not shopping until they drop in, and they ain't got credit cards and none of this shit. They need to stop fucking persecuting them and make them. Now they're taking people's driver's license away from them. They don't pay their fucking stupid ass tickets. That's highly illegal. You heard about that?
I believe it's an attempt to, should we say, encourage revenue sharing with the upper class.
Yeah, they collections and collections to
release the government.
DMV, you're supposed to get your driver's license taken away from you only if you did a moving violation like speeding or DUI or something like that, not because you forgot you didn't pay your fucking your goddamn smoking on the mall tickets off or some shit or your dog on the mall ticket or whatever. And that's what they're doing.
Well, there are crimes like sleeping that need to be punished.
Yeah, or just sitting somewhere, but like on a planter box or like over what case would happen. City Hall. Shitty Hall.
We're going to leave you in the midst of your tirade, Mike.
Fuck the police.
Thank you, sir. And Becky, anything else?
Oh, I did notice that the two really mob services here was this huge long line of, actually I did a little research. They had served over 85 people who were trying to get ID.
Right.
And that they had either lost their ID or it had been stolen or it had expired. And then the other long line was for phone cards. Huge long line for homeless people to get phone service for their cell phones.
Well, homeless people don't need cell phones. They need cells. So with me is the respected elder Mary Currie. Hi, Mary.
Hi, brother.
And how old are you now, Mary?
Oh,
come on, I want to know the whole truth.
Will you help me find her?
I might. You say you've had some problems with a person at the River Street Shelter?
Tracy, yeah.
And what problem have you had?
She stole my stuff, all my good stuff.
And what did that amount to?
The price?
No, the number, what the items were.
Golf clubs and golf balls.
You're a golfer?
Yeah, I was a golfer.
I mean, you got a walker with you, but you know,
well,
you must be quite a golfer.
My daughter's stuff.
Oh, I see. So you're just a caddy.
My daughter, yeah.
So what happened? Your golf club, you gave them to her, or you saw them sneak off with them?
She came in my apartment and stole them.
She gave you your...
She came in my apartment and stole...
Now, did you see her take them, or do you suspect it was her?
No, I saw her take them.
And did she tell you that she had a golfing engagement that she had to go to, or...
Engagement?
I mean, did she need them for a special golfing activity?
A guy, yeah. A boyfriend.
Do you think she was fencing your golfing equipment? Selling it for money.
Yeah, something like that.
She wasn't off to do a professional golfing tour. She wanted money.
Right.
So, did you report this to the police?
Yeah, they didn't do anything.
Now, are you indoors or outdoors? Or is it a secret?
I'm indoors. Don't worry.
It's a big secret. Well, we're going to kick you out of here. You claim to be homeless, but actually you're indoors. And what? How old are you now? She still doesn't want to say. Is it a secret? Go ahead. Tell me the truth.
Yeah. It's
sensitive about her. This is a woman, I would say you're in your 80s. I think that's fair to say.
Right.
And, you know, you're pretty tough. You're kicking ass, and you're still on your feet. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I will pass on the word that there's some Tracy person that definitely Mary Curie is concerned about.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
And Mary actually sought help from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, about 10 years ago when Officer Bratcher, a very broad-shouldered Santa Cruz police officer, reportedly manhandled her and threw her out of a shelter, arrested her in a shelter, and then charged her with trespass. She fought it in court. If you want to find more about that, you can, it's probably on the Indie Bay. Well, nope. Actually, it's earlier than that. I think we wrote a story about it. A lot of early stories about Santa Cruz homeless civil rights in the last 10 or 15 years. Many of them written by Becky Johnson, whose voice you heard earlier on tape. Some by me, some by others. It can be found on the HUF website, HUF Santa Cruz, www.hufsantacruz.org. And they were published in Street Spirit, the newspaper that homeless vendors still sell in Santa Cruz, though neither Becky nor I have had articles published there for a couple years. Street Spirit editor dumped Becky for her pro-Israeli government views, which I don't agree with Becky on her views, but to censor someone's homeless writing because of their political view on something else is just bullshit. It's too bad that also happened at Free Radio, in spite of other excuses that were raised. You have this sort of that's a censorship mentality in some respects. People are pretty sensitive about, you know, some things. And anyway, she wrote a lot of good stories and still continues to write good stuff. She has her own blog, as I mentioned before, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. And you can also check past articles in Street Spirit about Santa Cruz. Those are all collected on the HUF website, huffsantacruz.org, including Mary Curie's tale from years ago when she fought in court against a trespass charge, I believe it was. She's a very frail, she's a short, frail woman who's still feisty when she was walking around in a walker. And she finally got some housing, which, to the credit of the social services in Santa Cruz, finally. She was homeless for quite a while. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Here's a brief musical break. See if you like it.
The This track is not an attack upon the American people. It's an attack upon the system within which they live. Since 1945, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments. In the process, the U.S. has caused the end of life for several million people and condemned many millions more to a life of agony and despair. The strength of your dream and prevents you from reason. The American dream only makes sense if you're sleeping. It's just a cruel fantasy. Their politics took my voice away, but their music gave it back to me. The land where they're lumping are consumed by consumption, killing themselves to shovel down food in abundance. I guess a rapper from Britain is a rare voice. America is capitalism on steroids. Natives kept in casinos and reservations. Displaced slaves never given reparations. Take everything from Native Americans and wonder why I call it the racist experiment. Afraid of your melanin, the same as it's ever been. That ain't gonna change with the race of the president. I see him. Imperialism under your skin tone. You could call it Christopher Columbus syndrome.
Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Does it make any difference when they form a nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Does it make any difference when they form a nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Is it a foreign nation or is it a foreign nation? Does it make any difference when they form a nation?
The world's entertainer, the world's devastator. From Venezuela to Mesopotamia. Your cameras lie cause they have to hide the savage crimes committed on leaders that happen to try and nationalize eating competitions while the world's been starving. Beat up communism with the help of Bin Laden. Where would your war of terror be without that man? Every day you create more Nidal Hassans. Killer man from the military, you're a weirdo. But killer wog from the Middle East, you're a hero. Your country is causing screams that never reach your ear holes. America inflicted a million ground zeros. Follow the dollar and swallow your humanity. Soldiers committing savagery you never even have to see. Those mad at me writing emails angrily. I'm not anti-America, America is anti-me.
Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Doesn't make any difference when they form your nation. Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Is it a foreign nation or an abomination? Doesn't make any difference when they form your nation.
I don't care if him and Cheney are long lost relations. What matters more is the policies. I lost my patience. Stop debating, bringing race into the conversation. Occupation and cooperation equals profit making. It's over, people wake up from the dream now. Nobel Peace Prize, Jay-Z on speed dial. It's the substance within, not the color of your skin. Are you the puppeteer or the puppet on the string? So many believed it was instantly gonna change. There was still Dennis Ross, Brzezinski and Robert Gates. What happened to Chaz Freeman? What happened to Tristan Anderson? It's a machine that keeps that man breathing. I have the heart to say what all these other rappers aren't.
Words like Iraq, Palestine, Afghanistan.
The war's on and you morons were all wrong. I call Obama a bomber cause those are your bomb, your bomb.
And that's Abomination by Low Key. You can find it online at stopwar.org if you're interested. Lyrics look pretty good. They're pretty intelligible. The chorus was, is it Obama's nation or an abomination? Is it Obama's nation or an abomination? Is it Obama's nation or an abomination? Doesn't make any difference when they bomb your nation. And that's the chorus. Check it out. So, 427-3772 is the call-in number. I think we'll wait. I was going to do a little more talking about the endlessly depressing Rotkin-led moratorium on new medical marijuana dispensaries. I did find this article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about Scotts Valley, which I will read or mention after this phone call. Yes, you are on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Caller, what's your name?
This is an unknown anonymous caller.
All right, unknown. Robert. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay.
What's up?
You might know who this is, but I just wanted to let you know about a potential protest outside of the hidden Free Radio Santa Cruz headquarters. That protest may happen if you don't get your flunkies to correct the Sunday archive Professor Sid Broadside.
Oh, I think I recognize you in spite of your voice disguiser, caller, or unknown, as you might know. We know who you are. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. I think your point is well taken. For those who don't get the show when it's broadcast, it is archived on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Just go there and you click on the name of the show, listen to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, or even better, descriptions of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which will actually put you to a summary of what's on the show if I ever get the summary posted.
Usually it works.
Usually it works. The last couple Sundays I've been having problems. I think we posted the Sunday before last show as a lost show, and it's now on the, under the descriptions if you want to find it there.
Good to know. Thank
unknown.
You.
But the last Sunday show didn't happen. There was no show last Sunday because there was no power in the studio.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's the problem. I didn't know that. Thank you for that info.
Sure. And I'm
glad
sorry.
I
probably should have said. I thought I said that at the beginning of the program. Maybe I did. Maybe you didn't hear me.
I probably had missed it because I wasn't listening.
Well, all righty then. Try to listen every minute. Thank you, unknown.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
All righty. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So here's a story from the Sentinel of March 18th, Scotts Valley extends pot shop moratorium. See, what the great liberals in Santa Cruz do, the right-wingers in Scotts Valley, bark at and say, right on, because it's what we wanted in the first place. City leaders extended a moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries on Wednesday, this was 2 weeks ago, and asked staff to revise proposed rules for backyard beekeepers. We won't get into that. The medical marijuana dispensary decision extends a 45-day moratorium passed last month for another 10 months and 15 days, essentially approving a one-year ban on the medicinal pot shops as Scotts Valley leaders assess the store's potential pro and cons. Now, what this is I suspect this is another emergency piece of legislation because it sounds like exactly the same time frame, first 45 days, then 10 months and 15 days, which the Santa Cruz City Council had to use in suspending their zoning regulation. As part of the zoning regulation, you have to allow places which want to open a hearing. You know, they can be denied and their permits can be challenged, but you have to at least proceed with their applications unless you find there is a health, safety, or welfare emergency. And it's such a high bar that it requires not just a majority, not just a two-thirds majority, but a 6/7 majority. Very strange. 6 out of 7 votes on the city council are required to declare that this is an emergency. And no finding was ever found in Santa Cruz that there was an emergency requiring there be a moratorium and then a ban. I guess the ban doesn't require an emergency finding because it's a law they passed, and they passed it in the usual process. But suspending all applications until they passed the law did require this emergency finding, and there was no such finding ever really made in terms of any substantial statement about what the emergency was. The emergency, essentially, see, that's, in a way, that kind of suits what the medical marijuana paranoia reality is. That is to say, individuals who regard marijuana as a menace kind of adopt it as a first premise. You don't prove it, you assume it. You don't prove it, it's sort of, you know, it's your basic postulate. You have it. And the Santa Cruz City Council has done the same thing, and apparently so has the Scotts Valley City Council. The original moratorium came in response to a local businessman hoping to open a medical marijuana dispensary in Scotts Valley. The council's recommendation was to take the time needed to do this right. No indication why they would need a year to do this right. It's bullshit. I mean, it's simply bullshit. And it's despicable for a couple of reasons. First, it's dishonest. But secondly, it is succumbing to a kind of a paranoia. Now, if you want some sort of to adopt a philosophy that says marijuana is an evil drug that leads to heroin, will grow, you know, that causes people to have chromosome breaks. Now, that was LSD, I guess, the claim they made. It was not substantiated either. That, you know, that is, lessens your sperm count. There are all kinds of allegations about marijuana that have been thrown up in the reefer mad. It causes you to run around and kill people, you name it. Amotivational syndrome, well, there may be some truth in that. Who knows? I mean, anybody can abuse any of these drugs. But if you accept these presumptions, then everything else follows. But you don't want to really talk about those presumptions because they're so absurd and so discredited. So you don't. You just move on to the next subject, like you examine the ordinance in detail, like, well, I'll be talking about this on Sunday. That's what they did at the last Santa Cruz City Council meeting. Rotkin talked in detail, called up Lisa Molyneux of the Greenway to talk about new strains of marijuana being better and how she was putting in a lab. And there's nothing about why the basic point, which is they're saying no other medical marijuana dispensaries can open. There was no evidence being presented of any meaningful sort other than the fact that bigots in other cities were doing something similar. And to the discredit and shame of Wham, of Greenway, and of Limekiln, they did not take a strong stand saying, we favor the right of other people to open medical marijuana dispensaries. Instead, Rotkin assured Wham that if they wanted some special dispensation later, they could have it. It's enough to make you sick. I mean, it's like some sort of you're suddenly in a bazaar where you're trading things back and forth instead of dealing with matters involving the public interest. But of course, that can be to some extent what legislatures are in plutocracies, democracy corrupted by wealth, which really is what all democracies have generally been, but that we don't want democracies to be in the future. Some more interviews from Project Connect, I think. And then we will pass on to Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs. And I will try to find my tape of the Free Radio 15th anniversary, which I'll hopefully play on Sunday, although I'm having trouble locating it. We have a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Yes, hi. This is David calling back from New Jersey.
Hey, David.
You're just talking about the medical marijuana, and I just want to make the quick point here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really frustrating because the people who work really hard and who work hard to try and further the cause of American marijuana, and then finally you get it passed, you know, and these people in power are really thwarting the will of the people of California, you know. It's just really frustrating, and
not to mention New Jersey.
Yes, and New Jersey, too. I mean, this is, you know, it's just really frustrating when something good finally happens. And then you have these reactionaries and how anybody in government could call themselves progressive and be against medical marijuana or to support this moratorium is really being delusional, in my opinion.
And it's supposing medical marijuana. Yeah, thank you, David, for the call back.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye. All right, man. Bye. Bye-bye. And David, if you want to talk more about this on Sunday, if you happen to be listening in, feel free to call in. I'll be probably covering it in greater detail. Although, again, a number of people have told me, you know, medical marijuana is a hoax anyway, in the sense that we need to decriminalize not just marijuana, but all drugs. They have to be used. You know, we need to deal with medical problems, not treat them as criminal problems. It just has to be kind of the basic point. How do we, however, deal with the situation at the moment? And, you know, I keep thinking in terms of there'd be a lot less of this bullshit from these politicians if we had activists who were actually willing to stand up and call people like Lisa Molyneux and Valerie Correll and, you know, Ken Sampson and Don Lane and Mike Rotkin on their bullshit. You know, this is bullshit. And it needs to be stated as such. Simply, you know, you need to educate the community about what's really going on, but you also need to exert political pressure on these folks. And I didn't show up at this council meeting. I wrote a long response for Indy Bay, and I put it out, I mentioned that this was happening. It's just, I've got, you know, I'm running around with my fingers in so many little dikes, so to speak, or trying to raise so many issues that I kind of, that's really my job. I leave it to others to actually carry on, and the organizing is a hard thing to do. I can acknowledge that. Anita Henry, who I spoke to this morning, who is with MedX, she's done her own private medical marijuana distribution service for more than a decade, and is on the defunct and jokey it's not quite defunct, but it's completely a farcical Measure K commission, which is supposed to make all marijuana use the lowest enforcement priority in Santa Cruz and is treated like a joke. You know, she's talked about, she's tried to organize. She holds meetings and nobody comes. So for all of you out there in Santa Cruz who want to do something, you have to do something. It ain't going to happen unless you do. If you sit around waiting, it ain't going to work. So let's hear some more street interviews and then get ready for some good old time music with Uncle Dennis. And we'll see how that goes.
We're talking with
Sarah Ragland.
Sarah, you are a volunteer.
Yes.
You're an escort, perhaps?
I'm a client escort at the Santa Cruz Homeless Connection Project.
There you are. And you say you heard some things today that concerned you because I just handed you this Connect flyer.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the clients, and they were mentioning how there's a wide variety of services offered to them. However, due to the lack of transportation for homeless people, they can't get to these services, and they can't actually access them. And I just feel like something should be done about it because, like, these services are offered, and we're paying money to have these services, but they're not being utilized fully because people can't access them. So some sort of bus fare or tickets or anything. I think something needs to be done to give the homeless people an option to get somewhere where they can help themselves further.
You also said this, that something was mentioned about the city council.
Yeah, one of the clients that I was escorting said when I asked him if he tried to take this higher, he said that he goes to city council meetings every week, and they only give each speaker 2 minutes, and he stands up and tells them these things every week, and they just tell him, thank you for your concerns, and he sits down. And he said he's been going for months, and nothing has been done about it, and that there just needs to be, like, a reform in the city council system.
Well, Don Lane, our council member who has organized this event, will surely jump immediately into the fray and help, I'm sure, on his white stallion. Or, no, wait a minute, first he'd have to go back and change the anti-homeless ordinances he passed last year. Well, we can work on it.
Yeah, something needs to be done, because there's just an excess of people and money floating around in the world, and it could be utilized better, basically, to help people, I think.
We have been talking with
Sarah Ragland.
And Sarah, this is your first time doing this kind of thing?
Yes.
Well, if you'd like to volunteer to help homeless civil rights stuff, I've given you a card.
Mm-hmm.
We meet twice, once a week, and you can listen to the show twice a week. If you think you want to get involved, read the card.
I will.
And give a call, and we'll put you to work doing things more than one day a year charity work.
Yeah. Thank you. I would really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Sarah.
I hate being on tape.
We have some high praise for that fine activist, Uncle Robert. Let's hear more about this.
Right. This man, Robert North, has been unrelentless with his civil rights, helping people all the time from getting their rights violated. And he's been unrelentless over the years. I don't know how many. We don't
need
to count.
Have you been drinking again? What's the truth here?
Well, I had a couple of drinks, of course, but still.
Oh, ho, ho. But, and how much is Norris paying you to give this statement?
Nothing. It's a free speech. So I respect Mr. North because he helped a lot of people in here to realize their rights, and now they feel more comfortable.
Now, we're over here in the in front of City Hall. There's a sort of a knee-high area where people can sit down on a stone surface. I understand that the police were here earlier. I guess it was before you folks showed up, clearing people away. Officer Vasquez reportedly was telling people that it was illegal to
killing
sit here.
People.
Telling people.
No,
you're not
was,
killing people as far as I know, but perhaps killing people's rights.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that happening, but
you didn't see it happening.
Didn't see it happening. No, but at the same
hope
time,
it doesn't happen to you. I just wanted to check it out.
That's why I was glad to see you, Mr. North, because I know if I saw you, I could put things in perspective because you have showed us our rights. So now we know them. Thanks to you.
We've been talking with
Mr. Robert North. My name is Marshall Taylor.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks. Well, we're here on the sidewalk downtown on Pacific Avenue at about 20 to 6 on April 1st. Is this an April Fool's Day thing?
This is Easter.
How many more?
What is this?
Easter. So for Easter, we're making an Easter pinata, statue of Jesus, you know?
This is actually almost life-size person here. Looks like a lot of bumps. In fact, it looks like Jesus has breasts, and I could be mistaken about this.
You never know. I mean, you know, the people, the apostles that wrote about him, they came 40 years after him, you know.
And this artwork is being created here on the sidewalk in front of Borders. Have the police come up and demanded you?
Let me explain what this is. This is three guys. One of them is actually laying wet newspaper papier-mâché strips on a what looks like a dummy. It's actually a papier-mâché life-size figure on the sidewalk, apparently making a piñata of Jesus for Easter. This is at the corner of Soquel and Pacific, and it was about 2 hours ago.
Not permit?
Nah, the police kind of leave me alone, you know? I don't know why. I could just kind of have that look.
I see. So they're a little wary of perhaps the religious implications here. Although I don't see any Christian, accoutrements. What's your name?
James.
And James, where will this be exhibited once it's... Will it be crucified? Will it be strung up? Will it be burned in effigy? Or will you simply just throw rocks at it and say, you homeless bum, get out of town?
You know, all that stuff sounds good. Uh-huh. I think we should we're gonna try to set it up like a piñata style, hang it, get some people with bats, you know, and just like beat the hell out of it.
Police uniforms or maybe take back Santa Cruz buttons or downtown association labels.
I don't know. This isn't really political. It's more of the religious, I think. It's just like you could celebrate Easter with a bunny rabbit and an egg from a chicken, or you can beat up a statue of Jesus Christ. You know, it's like celebrating Jesus come back to life, and then we're putting him back.
Or you can snitch on a homeless person downtown and possibly give them a citation for sitting near a building.
What?
It's illegal to sit within 14 feet of a building on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I mean, Santa Cruz is now... Yeah, very capitalistic. It's not the socialistic town that we all once...
It never was, actually. But, you know, there was a larger counterculture community here that at least rumbled somewhat when the police went through and when the Downtown Association tried to do its business. Again, where will people be able to see this particular thing? Have you got a set-up place for it?
No, I don't right now, but Sunday, you know, we should hit the beach. We should go, I don't know, you tell me, like, where should we put it? Where would be a good spot? In front of the...
I'd string it up at City Hall myself.
City Hall? Okay.
Although, actually, City Hall's kind of out of the way. How about in front of the Downtown Association's office up the street? Or, I mean, I do tend to see things in terms of their impact on real people who are poor, which is, I think, all good Christians. And Muslims, for that matter, and not to mention other religions are supposed to be concerned with these folks, but so often it's not the case. I see you have some associates here.
Definitely.
What's your name? He's taken off. He said in the road. What's your name?
This is a yogi master.
Would you like to say anything for free radio?
Indeed, I would love to share with you conscious words of wisdom. From the universe itself, from the being, from what you speak of when you look at yourself in a mirror to what you wake up to every morning. What is it that you wake up to? Do you wake up to the presence of this moment, or do you wake up to tomorrow, or do you wake up to your past, or do you wake up to your future?
Or do you wake up to a police officer telling you to get the fuck moving? Because it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night. That's always a question. But
we have not been harassed today,
believe
that's good.
Or not.
Yeah, that's cool.
I appreciate that. Again, thank you for your thoughts, and thank you for your papier-mâché religious artifact. And thank you for sharing with the hungry, hungry person. Hey, any comments for free radio?
Oh, damn.
And what about you? Anything to say?
For what?
For free radio.
For free radio.
For free radio.
What?
Oh, I'm on the streets. I'm going to be doing a show shortly. Yeah. Anything you want to let the community know is happening down here? Anything? Any concerns you have that they should be aware of?
I do, but right now I'm not.
It's not all together with you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll catch you again.
Okay, then. Thank you, Nora.
All right. We have some criminal guitarists here sitting illegally by the side of the street. Any comments, gentlemen and gentlewoman, for free radio?
What's the question?
What's the answer is really what I'm wondering.
What's the answer? Peace and love, still the answer. Always the answer.
What about the peace police? Have they been harassing you?
The number 41. And
number 41, yes.
Can we get a card for him?
Oh, sure.
Parmesan.
So,
and that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Let's round out the evening with a song from the last from the album, the Great Depression. This is what is this? This is We Sure Got Hard Times, and Uncle Dennis will then lead you into the happier times. But let's not forget that they may not be as happy as they're painted out to be. back on Sunday at 9:30, and maybe we'll chat again then. Thanks for being with me. Archive show at huffsantacruz.org. Call me off air at 423-4833.
Write a song to sing you, and it's no excuse. I've got a song to sing you, and it's no excuse. And it sure is the devil I believe you gotta lose. You want to drink a little, you think it's awful nice. When you want to drink a liquor and you think it's awful nice, you put your hand in your pocket and you ain't got the price. You heard about a job, now you is on your way. Heard about a job, now you is on your way. 20 minutes after the same job, all in the same old day. Hard time, hard time, we got hard time now. Hard time, hard time, we sure got hard time now. Just think and think about it, we got hard time now. You started in mooching, but your mooching been vain. You started in mooching, but your mooching been vain. Be careful with yourself, you'll get a ball and chain. Lard and bacon, butter a dollar of town. Lard and bacon, butter a dollar of town. Cotton have started to selling, but it keeps going down and down. Just before election, you was talking how you was going to vote. Just before election, you was talking how you was going to vote. And after election was over, your head down like a billy goat. Hard time, hard time, sure got hard time now. Hard time, hard time, we got hard time now. Or just think and think about it, we sure got hard time now.
And we certainly do. Robert Norris has been here for far too long. He'll be back on Sunday. I think he'll actually get a show this Sunday, Robert. Yeah, he didn't get a show last Sunday.
He comes in at noon to deal with the whole situation. Typical.
Well, there was a pretty significant issue. The circuit breaker had definitely blown. It was, there was no power to half the house. So, anyway, that was the issue on Sunday. The reason Robert was not on the air, but that all got fixed. So, anyway, we will listen for you. What time are you going to interrupt Thomas's show?
It's a secret.
It's a secret.
Tune in and find out.
You're scheduled to be in at 10 a.m., so something like that. Anyway, I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. We're also at www.freakradio.org. This is a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.